Sony.
Hello, Canada. Today's date is April 7th, 2024. Welcome to a full edition of Canadian Common Sense, Canada's Issues in about an hour. It is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC.
How are you, my man?
Well, I'm doing pretty good because we got more craziness in BC to talk about today.
Yeah, so those of you who have been going through withdrawal, well, we got your fix today. So, yeah. On a programming note, I apologize for a third show in a row. My voice has been a little shot. I've been fighting off a chest cold, and the congestion seems to be gone, but my voice still isn't 100%. So I don't know. Perhaps it's the Wuhan affliction, but at any rate, I'll do my best for you again, but sorry if I sound a little bit off. All right, so a few housekeeping notes to take care of. One, listener Nikki, who lives in the Niagara area, said, yeah, they're expecting a million people to come look at the solar eclipse tomorrow. And they're telling residents, hey, maybe you might want to just watch that from home because roads are going to be closed and they're going to be beefing up security, etc. So, I don't know, Lewis, maybe we were wrong that they out there making fun of their declaring a state of emergency because, well, I guess if you're going to get a million people down there for a few hours of viewing, maybe that is going to be a little congestion.
Yeah, maybe. I was looking at the path of the solar eclipse, and it's not, Niagara isn't the only place to watch it. But it's the best place in Southern Ontario to watch it. You can, if you're closer, if you live on like the east side of Toronto, you might want to head to like Brockville or Kingston. Yeah, Kingston to watch it, because that they're right in the path as well. In Quebec, like there's Sherbrooke is right in the path. You got Miramichi and New Brunswick, and then the entire northern half of PEI. I think if you're heading to Niagara to watch this and they're expecting a million people, you're an idiot. in my estimation. I mean, it's a two-lane road into Niagara. Like, it is not, it's not like a, like you got a freeway until you get there, and then it's a two-lane road all the way to where the falls are. It's like, even just on a regular weekend, it's an insane proposition to go to Niagara. I think you got to be a complete and utter moron to want to head there tomorrow. So that's just my opinion. But
that's what people come here for. As Jason said, we are the bitch slap of reality. So,
yeah.
So, a couple more housekeeping notes. Completely unbeknownst to us, as we were recording the show last weekend, that well, Veterans Affairs was the first I saw that said, hey, Canada, happy March holiday season, even though it was Easter Sunday last Sunday. And then Justin Trudeau said, hey, everybody, happy Trans Day of Visibility. I thought it was Easter last Sunday.
It was Easter last Sunday. And it's interesting because we talked about this right before the show started. And I said, you know, what other agenda could get the leader of a country to ignore a holiday the world, like the Christian world, has been celebrating for nearly 2,000 years and co-opt it for a special interest group? This is the only agenda I can think of that could actually accomplish that. I mean, Joe Biden did the same thing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and it made me think, and I mentioned this before we started recording as well, that, okay, so you're putting an election off, you know, air finger quotes, for because of Diwali, but no, it's okay to just co-opt Easter. So I think, okay, yeah, there's something fishy here.
Yeah. I'm just tired of it. I mean, someone posted a list of every single LGBTQ holiday or celebration day. And there's 174 or 175 days every year that is to recognize or celebrate LGBTQ issues. That's insane. I'm sorry. You try and tell me this isn't about brainwashing. You know, don't tell me this is not about brainwashing. Don't tell me that this is not about a real agenda. There is a real agenda here. And I'm sorry, but I just don't. 174 days or 175 days. I mean, that is, you know, virtually half the year.
Yeah, wow. And here's the problem I find too. I actually feel sorry for the LNG of that group because, well, I mean, I have some people I grew up with who happen to be gay, and they just say, in a way they're trying to really wipe out gay people with the idea that, oh, well, you like men, well, you must be a woman then. And like my one friend is like, no, I just happen to like men. Like I don't want to be a woman. I'm happy being a dude. And this particular friend, he's very, very much a man. Like he's buff. He's in shape. He's works on a farm. He's just like, yeah, I just happen to like dudes.
Yeah, no, I have a couple friends that are gay and they say the same thing. They're like, you know, they don't support all of this.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because they're like, you know, this is his words. He says, you know, we finally achieved equality in this country. And now people are starting to hate us because of all the, of all these special days, all these, you know, days of recognition, all these, you know, Pride Month and all this. He says, I just want to live my life and be a normal person. And he says he gets called homophobic himself because he doesn't want to carry around a pride flag or have, you know, a pride flag on his car or on his house or whatever. And he gets called homophobic by other people in the movement. Right. And he said, you know, this whole trans issue, he says, you know, if I was going through middle school or high school right now, he said, I would have teachers or school counselors telling me that I'm not gay, that I'm actually the opposite sex. And he said, I could easily have been one of those people who had his penis cut off or gone through or had puberty blockers and all of this kind of stuff. He said that, you know, it's a big, big problem because like we've said on this show, 90%+ of teenagers who identify as trans just grow up to be gay, and they're mutilating their bodies in high school, whether it's through chemical castration, whether it's through puberty blockers, whether it's through girls taking high doses of testosterone, because like their voices will always be like a deeper, huskier voice if they take that for too long, and then they can't. Like, don't let anyone tell you that these puberty blockers and all that is reversible, because it's not. And they've proven it time and time again that it's not reversible. And he said, you know, like this gay friend of mine, he said, you know, he could easily have been one of those people if he was going through school today.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. So, couple more housekeeping notes. I actually laughed out loud when I read this CBC story. It said only 15% of Canadians have actually got their COVID boosters last fall. And I said, 15%? Does that make 85% of Canadians? anti-vaxxers?
Yes, it does, Tony.
So I'm finally in the majority.
But frankly, I am shocked that 15% of Canadians are still getting the boosters.
Yeah, speaking of brainwashing, eh?
Yeah, like it's surprising. And I know the number's highest in BC. So that just shows you how crazy we are.
Yes, indeed. So two more housekeeping notes. One, we've been putting up some polls for our Spotify listeners, just for the fun of it. And they seem to be catching on, but silly me, I never read any results of those polls.
Yeah, I didn't even know about these polls. So I just got to say thanks, Tony, for keeping me in the loop. So if you want to see the polls, when you go into the description of the episode, the poll is in the description of the episode, and you can go in there and vote. And so when Tony brought it up in the last episode, I went, huh, first I've heard about this. And so I went and I looked and I couldn't even find them. And I had to text Tony and say, hey, where the hell are these? And he told me where. And so I went in and looked and I was like, hey, this is cool. We gotta let our listeners know about these, because if you don't actually go into the description and all you do is just hit play on the episode, you're not going to see it. So go into the description and answer the polls.
Yeah. So we started it a couple weeks ago just for the fun of it. And the first poll was about the carbon tax. And it was just, would you rather have the carbon tax hike paused or canceled completely? Well, 100% people said cancel it completely. And yep, I'm in definite full agreement with that. So then episode 275, we attached the poll saying, should politicians be entitled to a better pension than working Canadians? Okay, I don't know who you are out there, but there is one troll who said, I'm going to say yes, just so that I can be noted for being the lone dissenter. I don't think you believe your own BS if you're saying yes, politicians should be entitled to a better pension, but you've gotten your notoriety. One person said yes, everybody else said no. All right, and of course, now it's going to buffer on me. And our latest poll from last week, do you believe there will be a federal election in 2024? Okay, much closer than I thought. Our listeners don't agree with us, Lewis. Yes was 43%. No, Trudeau is going to hold on, 57%. Well, we're going to talk about that again this episode. And
yes,
we're going to reverse those numbers. We've got more compelling arguments this time.
Yeah.
Okay, so one more note on housekeeping. We got a Facebook message from a listener, and thank you for all of those, by the way. We get a lot of them, and I really appreciate it. So this from listener Alora just said, thank you guys for providing a fair and thoughtful breakdown of the issues that matter to me. I look forward to your podcast, and I learn something every week. Take care, and please never stop. Well, we certainly plan to keep going as long as online harms does not pass.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about it on the show. The only way we're stopping is if the government forces us to.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to be talking about that later in the episode. So stay tuned. Okay. So we have got a busy show for you today, like always. So on the show today, what the health, BC? Han Dong has amnesia. Election? What election? Look at those polls and more. Where do you want to start, sir?
Well, to all our listeners who've been missing the BC craziness, we're going to talk about BC's craziness again, because boy, do we have some.
Well, we got to get people hooked again, right? So let's give them a little shot of BC nuttiness from Northern Health BC. Lewis, I am so glad this is not your health region, but a memo was circulated. It was actually last summer that the memo came out, but it's only breaking out in the media now. There was a memo circulating through Northern Health for nurses and other hospital staff to, just kind of turn a blind eye to illicit drug use in hospital settings. They just said, if someone's smoking meth or, you know, they've got fentanyl shooting up. Yeah. Just let it go. Don't confiscate the drugs. And They cited an example that a lady who had just given birth was smoking crystal meth in her room. No, nothing to see here. Whoa.
Yeah, and it's not just let them do their drugs in the hospital room. It's also don't take away their weapons.
They're what?
Their weapons.
Okay, so yeah, we're just gonna bring a knife in for our own protection and no, nothing to see here.
Yeah. And I read online that this wasn't just Northern Health, that also the Island Health, the Island Health region was also doing that, which would be Vancouver Island.
Well, that should surprise nobody.
Yeah, so I mean this is like insanity. I mean, you go to a hospital and you're allowed to do hard drugs in the hospital room. Like, what the hell? I mean, that example you used of the woman who just gave birth and then she's smoking crystal meth in her room. I mean, probably with the baby there, probably. So, I mean, that baby is friggin' doomed.
Yeah.
Like,
Well,
that baby should be taken away right now. I mean,
the baby's
along
likely
with,
born an addict,
yeah,
right?
along with the drugs. The drugs should be taken away too, but that baby should be taken away like right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just for contrast, a coworker of mine had a heart attack, oh, I would say probably 10 years ago, and he was a smoker. And they actually put him on the patch right in the hospital when he arrived there. And so, okay, so we can make certain you don't take nicotine anymore. But if you happen to be over in BC, well, hey, nicotine's the least of your worries. Just go
Yeah.
ahead and smoke that meth.
Yeah. It's like I don't even know what to say. I mean, it's just insane. It's absolutely insane. And for all our listeners outside of BC, this is what you get in BC.
Yeah, and well, BC United health critic Shirley Bond did have something to say about it. And she said, and I quote, "The BC NDP has created a free-for-all for open drug use, shockingly, even within our hospitals." And end quote, yes.
Yeah,
Yes, Miss
she's
Bond
correct.
is exactly right.
Yeah, she's 100% correct. I mean, in BC, you're allowed to do drugs out in the open in parks, near schools, on the street downtown. Like, it's all, you're allowed to do it. In fact, our courts ruled that they're allowed to do it.
Yeah, and
Like,
the police.
it's a constitutional right, apparently.
Yeah, and police are allowed to. Think how they. I can't quote it directly, but how it was placed was police are allowed to encourage the drug users to move along if they're at a school playground, but they can't actually force them to.
Yeah, can't arrest them either.
Yeah.
It's like if they can be in a school playground and they can't be arrested.
Yeah, and they can't confiscate the drugs either. And that was another thing that they said with the hospitals. Like they told the staff and how to deal with the illicit drugs. They're not to measure, to weigh, or test the substance, sorry. So they're just essentially told, look away.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you feel as a nurse or an orderly in one of those hospitals being told, oh, just turn your back? Well, what happens if they jump me and try to
Yeah.
stab me with that knife they're carrying? Oh well, we'll just walk away.
Or the needle that's probably infected with some kind of, disease.
Right?
I mean, HIV is still a thing. I mean, it's insanity. It's just insanity, and this is where I live.
Yeah, well, it is insanity, and then you got to ask yourself, maybe there's a reason there's a mass exodus of healthcare workers leaving the system.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's a big problem facing BC right now, is that there's a huge shortage of healthcare workers. I mean, part of that is because of the government, firing 4,000 people during COVID and not rehiring them. But there's also other reasons. I mean, we had shortages before that happened. So, I mean, every week there's at least one emergency room in my region that is closing, because they don't have the staff to keep the emergency room open. So they're closing the hospitals on weekends or at nights. There's like the health center in Merritt has closed multiple times over the last few weeks. The one in Princeton has closed multiple times over the last several years. On a regular basis, it's closing. There's the ER in Oliver has closed a few times in the past few months. I mean, it's a regular occurrence. And then they go and they allow they tell the hospital workers that people are allowed to do hard drugs in their hospital room and keep their weapons on them. I mean, what are we doing? It's like we talked about before, where, you know, I said, you know, I didn't know what the end game was, and you said it was control, and I said, I don't know how you control a system that's in chaos. And then when I found out, you know, that this is what they did in communist Russia at the beginning, and they did with communist China. They forced a revolution by creating chaos. And then once that revolution was complete, they got rid of the revolutionaries because they're a disturbing force. They're a destabilizing force. They're not a compliant force, right? And so then it all made sense to me. And now it's like, I know what's going on. And I just don't know why people would want to create this mess. I mean, control is one thing, but it's empower, right? But I don't know why people would be okay with this. Like, you got to be evil. You've got to be evil.
Yeah, no, I'll take a little sidebar on that, because after you talked about that in the show last week, about the, you know, the revolutionaries being sort of shuffled aside right after the revolution, then I thought about the Me Too movement. Does anybody hear the name Rose McGowan anymore? But she was front and center in getting Harvey Weinstein blacklisted. I mean, you don't hear much about Alyssa Milano anymore. And that list goes on. I mean, all these people who were front and center are all of a sudden, yeah, they've just been cast aside now that the movement got what it wanted.
Yeah. No, it's true. I never thought about that, but you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So back on the health front here, there is a, I can't remember the name of the town now, but there's a hospital in the North Island on Vancouver Island that was experiencing the exact same thing. They had to close their ER a couple nights a week. And as you had said before, with walk-in clinics being overflowed and people not having a family doctor, they're being told, oh, well, you've got, you know, you're sick, go to the ER. Oh, the ER is closed. Oh, so now what do I do? Well, good luck to you. And that's what's happening in the North Island. A lot of people are just like, oh, I used to go here, but now I have to call ahead and make sure they're actually open.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a scary situation in our province right now, because like 30% of British Columbians don't have a doctor. I think is what it is. So I think it's around 30%.
Wow.
And so ERs are being used as walk-in clinics. Like, they're being used as a walk-in doctor's office because there's nowhere else for people to go. And so you go to the ER and it's an 8, 9, 10 hour wait. And it's because, you know, there's no other option for people. I mean, the walk-in clinics aren't even, it's like, when the walk-in clinic opens, if you don't get your appointment within the first 5 minutes of it being open, you're not getting in that day. So, I mean, we have a big problem, like a really big problem. And it's like, nobody wants to fix it. Nobody even wants to talk about it. Cause if you talk about it, you're labeled an extremist, or you want American style healthcare. Well, American style healthcare would be a hell of a lot better than what we got right now.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people are willing to pay if that means they get in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, American style healthcare, it's not perfect. It's got its problems and it's got big problems, but right now I would take that over what we've got.
Yeah, and actually, to be fair, as long as you have health insurance, the American system is great. But that health insurance sometimes costs you $400 a month. So,
Yeah, but I mean, they also pay a lot less in tax, right?
exactly,
So
yeah.
I mean, like, you can go to Washington State, you don't even have a state income tax. So Washington State, Texas, Florida,
Tennessee.
Tennessee, none of them have state income taxes. So I mean, like, you're paying way less tax, so you can afford healthcare insurance. I mean, sometimes that healthcare insurance isn't the greatest. I mean, you got to really do your research. I mean, some of them have lifetime limits on what can be spent on certain diseases or whatever, right? So, I mean, once you hit that limit, you're kind of SOL. You got to sell your house or whatever, right? So, there are problems. There are big problems in the US healthcare system, but I would rather have that right now. You can at least get in, you can at least get treatment. You can at least have a doctor. I mean, that you can't say that about Canada.
No, that's right. I mean, BC is already sending cancer patients to Washington State as an example. Here in Saskatchewan, they're actually sending elective hips and knees to a private clinic in Calgary. So it's yeah, it's broken everywhere. I mean, here in Saskatchewan, they're closing rural hospitals and just not maintaining other ones and trying to send everybody into Saskatoon and Regina. So then you overload the city healthcare facilities and nobody can keep up.
No, and if you want to know a loophole in the Canadian healthcare system, I'll tell you, there are surgeons who do hips, backs, knees. They're considered elective, even though if you don't get it done, you don't have a life. They're considered elective surgeries. A lot of these doctors, like, I know of surgeons who work full time in the Alberta healthcare system, and they come out to BC on weekends and they have a private surgical clinic in BC. And then patients from Alberta will fly to BC, pay out of pocket to have the surgery done in BC by the same doctor that they would be seeing in Alberta. And that is how they get their knees, these back surgeries done, these hip and knee surgeries done, where they actually pay for it and they get it done a lot sooner. And so this is a loophole in the Canadian system. They have to leave the jurisdiction they live in, but once they leave that jurisdiction, they can pay for it. But the doctor who's doing it can't be from the region that they're getting it done in. That's why, like, an Alberta surgeon can fly to say Kelowna or Vancouver, and their patient will fly from Calgary to Kelowna or Vancouver, pay to have the operation done, and then both of them fly back the next day.
Jeez.
Like, that's happening in Canada right now. I know somebody who does this. Like, this is what we're dealing with in this country. It's a loophole in the system. And I mean, I don't mean to, publicize this so that someone shuts the door on this, because I hope, they don't. But if you as a listener are in the situation where you're going to have to wait a year and a half, but you do have the financial means to get it done sooner, this is one of the ways to do it.
Yeah, and I have heard this actually before. So, I mean, we're not the first to expose it, but it's sad that that has to be that way.
And I hate to use the word exposed, because I'm not trying to, like, say that this is a bad thing.
No,
I
no,
mean,
not at all. Yeah.
as far as I'm concerned, this is a great thing. But it's what's bad about it is that it has to happen,
Yeah, exactly.
because it shouldn't be happening, but it does, and that's good. And I hope people do it, because that shortens the line for the people who can't afford it.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. All right. So from BC, let's go across the country to Toronto, more specifically to the riding of Don Valley North, and well, currently independent MP Han Dong. So Han Dong was the center of controversy over his nomination race. So just to bring you up to speed, Han Dong was was a liberal candidate in Don Valley North in 2021. And, well, there was a few busloads of Chinese diaspora students who came to his nomination and, well, helped him to win that nomination and then subsequently the election when they came out and voted. So thankfully, now that there is a public inquiry to election interference, well, Han Dong had to come testify. And wouldn't you know it, he doesn't have a lot of recollection of what exactly went on for his nomination. I'm stunned.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what do you mean, busloads? Oh, yeah. My wife told me about that.
Yeah.
Like that, like he, that was something he said. He said that his wife reminded him about these busloads of Chinese students.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. Even Biden doesn't like claim that much amnesia. I mean, like this is, this guy is obviously, what's the word I'm looking for? Complicit. I mean, he's yeah. That to me, that this is like an admission of guilt. I mean, they've been talking about these busloads of Chinese students who voted in his nomination, in his riding. And I mean, it's been all over the news, all this, but he didn't remember any of it. He didn't know anything about it, but his wife told him about it.
His wife reminded him, yes, there's two busloads of Chinese students who came to his nomination meeting. Then she reminded him, oh, yeah, don't remember that busload of international students who you encouraged to come out and vote for you when you went to speak at that private school? Oh, yeah, those guys. Yeah, whoops. I'd forgotten about that third busload of students.
Yeah. What an idiot.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, I'm surprised that he's actually being that dense, because, I mean, go ahead and talk about the two busloads of students who came to the nomination, because so you know how the sausage is made, Canada. In the Liberal Party of Canada, and in most parties for that matter, you can join the party at 14 years of age with voting privileges. Yeah. But voting privileges means you vote for the candidate, you vote for the constituency association, board positions, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a Canadian citizen to vote in those particular constituency elections.
Yeah.
So therefore, in the case of Han Dong, busing in two busloads of students to make that happen is not against any rules within the Liberal Party of Canada, and likely not the Conservative Party of Canada either. I mean, this is not specifically a Liberal bruise, as it were. But busing in those international students from, well, wherever, that school that he had spoke at, well, if they're not citizens, they can't vote. So I'm not really sure what, if they were there to influence or what the heck they were doing coming out. But unless they're members, they can't actually vote. So
yeah.
I guess good for him for signing up those busloads of students for the Liberal Party to win his nomination. But yeah, you can't just take a bunch of students from a school that happens to be just outside your riding and just take their word that, oh yeah, we live in the riding, and bust them in. That's not how it works, Mr. Dong. And you know that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, something fishy's going on there, obviously. He's implicit in it, obviously. He's not a very good actor.
That is probably the best way to say it. He is definitely not a good actor. And well, we'll continue with the Han Dong story. There's a city councilor in Toronto named Michael Chan, who also had a little bit of amnesia when he was called to testify, saying, no, I don't remember helping Han Dong at all for his nomination. Oh, so then they just happened to bring up a video of Han Dong accepting the nomination. And who was standing right behind him on stage? Oh, Michael Chan. Whoops. I could see how that would be pretty easy to forget that, too, if I was Mr. Chan.
Yeah. What's with all the amnesia?
Yeah. Like,
I don't understand. Is this like a collective thing? Was there like some kind of energy weapon being used to make everybody lose their memory?
Pulse attack.
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand. But hey, here's something. Last night I was watching The Fifth Estate, and they did an entire episode about the Chinese police stations that are operating across Canada and the US. But they focused primarily on Canada. It was really interesting, and everybody should go and watch it. And I'm sure it's available on demand, whether it's Crave or whatever you watch,
or on Gem for that matter.
Oh yeah, that's probably true. So go and watch that episode of The Fifth Estate last night, dealing with the police, the Chinese police stations, because they go really into depth about how these, or what they do in Canada, and how they're putting pressure on Canadian Chinese citizens, like Chinese Canadians, whether they're citizens or foreign students or whatever, and how they put pressure on them to do their bidding in Canada, how they put pressures on their families back in China to make them do what they want them to do. It's also about how they are trying to round up like dissidents, people who speak poorly about the Chinese government, and trying to get them to go back to China to face prosecution. So, I mean, like, this is it, and they go into depth about the relationship between the federal government, the Canadian federal government, and the Chinese Communist Party, and how it also, and a lot of this started under Harper, and because the Chinese government wanted to, or they delisted Canada as a trusted destination for tourism for Chinese people, right?
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and Harper had to give up a Chinese fugitive who was living in Canada to receive that status, being, or the status of being a trusted destination, reinstated. And he sent, like, he they sent a Chinese, someone the Chinese government didn't like, back to China for prosecution. Granted, they did make the Chinese agree to not kill him, but dude is still in prison, right? Like, he's for life. And who knows what his crimes really were, right? Or if he even was, you know, if it was just anti Chinese Communist Party rhetoric, or if he was actually a criminal, I don't know. Because apparently the Chinese government didn't provide any proof of what this man's crimes were. So, and then they go into how, since Trudeau's been elected, how the relationship between the Chinese Communist Party and the Canadian government has just intensified. Like, I mean, I'm not happy to learn about what Harper did. I'm not cool with that. I mean, I'm not cool with a lot of the things. There were a few things Harper did that I wasn't happy about, like the TPP, right? Like, that was one thing I wasn't happy about. What was that called? The Trans-Pacific Partnership or something, which is a trade agreement with China. And I was not happy with it because it gave up a lot of autonomy in the Canadian markets. It allowed the Chinese government to buy our mining companies, our forestry companies. It seemed like it was more a deal that favored China more than it favored Canada. So I was not happy about that. So, I mean, and I mean, I'm saying this because I'm just trying to get people to understand. I'm not a blue no matter who, right? I'm not like a person who just thinks that every conservative prime minister is, you know, flawless and all that. Harper had his faults. He had some things that he did that I didn't agree with, did not agree with the bill that they passed that would allow the RCMP to get our emails without a warrant. I did not support that either. I was quite upset about that because privacy, the right to privacy, is one of the tenets of a free society. But Harper overall is a prime minister that I absolutely miss, but there were some things he did I'm not happy about, and this is one of them, this deal with China that they made. Since Trudeau has come to power, that relationship between the Chinese Communist Party and the federal government has really intensified. And the reason I believe that these Chinese police stations are still operating in Canada is because Trudeau wants them here. There is just no other explanation, because he has made no effort whatsoever to shut them down or get them or tell the Chinese government to get them the hell out. There's been no movement on that. So that says to me that Trudeau has got some kind of an agreement with the Chinese government, and it's a dangerous agreement. And we as Canadians should be extremely concerned about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, we know that that Trudeau is a fan of communists. I mean, his old man was a communist, so it's the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, right?
Both of them,
exactly.
Both of his dads were communists.
That's right.
I mean, one was an actual dictator. That would be his like birth father, and yes. And the other one was a wannabe dictator, his stepfather, who the Americans actually referred to as the Canadian commie.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And he wasn't allowed to enter the U.S.
No. And of course, his birth father was not allowed to enter the U.S. either, and had quite the antagonistic relationship with the U.S. So,
yeah.
So, no, we are never going to stop making Trudeau Castro jokes ever.
No, never.
All right, so let's stick with the Chinese Communist Party, because Kenny Chu also was featured in the testimony, and I heard him interviewing with, God, I can't remember if it was Brian Lilly or who it was. At any rate, he was talking about the campaigns on WeChat, and as it turns out, there were 600,000 Chinese diaspora citizens in Vancouver area, or in the greater Vancouver area, who were all part of this WeChat group, because apparently in the East Asian community, WeChat is a very popular social media app where a lot of the Chinese citizens, or Chinese diaspora, I should say, get their news and their social media.
And how many did you say?
According to Kenny Chu, 600,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's got to be BC wide. I can't imagine there being that many just in the greater Vancouver area. But well, maybe
there's not very many Chinese people outside of the Vancouver area. So
right. So
yeah.
Okay. So yeah. So anyway, I'll take his numbers at his word, and he just said, yeah, it was through WeChat that Kenny Chu ended up losing his seat, because of course they were campaigning against conservatives very actively on WeChat. And Kenny Chu even admitted that, had the Conservative Party had people who would be, who were fluent in Mandarin and Cantonese and were able to get on top of these propaganda stories, it wouldn't have made a difference, because the algorithms would just have suppressed those stories and kept the bad news flowing. So as it turns out, so Kenny Chu ended up losing his seat because of that. Jenny Kwan, who was an NDP MP, was also targeted, apparently. She still managed to hold her seat, but it turned out there was between 6 and 9 seats that the Conservative Party potentially lost because of this influence campaign. But I don't know who heard Aaron O'Toole's testimony and any of the multitude of interviews he gave afterward, but apparently Chinese in election influence was the least of his concerns, because according to Aaron O'Toole, the only reason they lost that election, that they went from possibly winning a majority government a week before the vote to, well, the results we have, was because of the vaccine mandates. And it was just because there was too many people in his party that were not in favor of vaccine mandates, and they weren't able to clarify a position on that. That's why the Conservatives lost. Nothing to do with interference. No, nope. Nothing to do with Aaron O'Toole's very strong stance against China, which I supported. No, no, it was the vaccine mandates, according to Aaron O'Toole.
Yeah, it's a bit of a...
revisionist history.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, I was trying to find the word to describe how I felt about that statement, because it's obviously wrong. I mean, the Chinese interference is quite strong in this country, and the evidence just keeps piling up. So, I mean, I don't understand how anybody can possibly think that the Chinese interference in our elections is not a real thing, and it's not effective. It is effective.
Yeah, absolutely it is. So, to Handong, Aaron O'Toole, and probably Justin Trudeau, who will be testifying next week in front of the Election Interference Committee, who will probably also have some memory lapses. Screw you all. Screw you all.
Yeah.
I'm...
Yeah. I don't even want to say what I have to say, because we got to keep this somewhat family friendly, but... I mean, Trudeau, the last time Trudeau testified, he had some memory lapses too. So I fully expect he'll have some amnesia this time around as well.
Yeah, I mean, even when he's testifying in front of committees now, he gives the exact same line to every question. And it's just that we're going to continue to be working to support Canadians. Even if it's Mr. Trudeau, what temperature is it outside today? We are going to continue to support Canadians, blah, blah, yeah. Blah. And so,
yeah. And I mean, he even this past week, he even revived an old trope that he was using, you know, 8 years ago. And that was middle class Canadians and those working hard to join it.
Right.
Yeah, he brought that one back this week, and it was like, oh my God, I just about drove my car into a tree when I heard that come on, because I was like, did we just go back in time? Like, as soon as I heard it, I was like looking for a tree to hit. Like, I could not start this all over again.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, are we in 2015 again? Because I can't live the next 8 years like this again. No, I just can't.
Yeah, exactly. So well, let's move on to something that Trudeau actually has been talking a lot about, and that is housing. So I actually want to start with Canada's federal housing advocate, because, well, she had some brilliant ideas on how to fix the housing crisis. Now let's what is her name? Marie-Josée Houle. She is Canada's federal housing advocate. That's her official position.
Yeah.
Well, in September of last fall, she said Canada's housing crisis has reached catastrophic proportions and is only getting worse. Well, she was absolutely right about that.
Yep, she's correct.
And then she said, Canada recognizes that housing is a human right. I don't necessarily agree with that.
She's not correct.
No, it's not a human right to housing. I mean, obviously we all need it, especially in a cold country like Canada. But
yeah,
human right, I don't know. But and because housing is a human right, she claims it's up to the federal government to prioritize people's human right to housing over profit. I know you know where this is going, Lewis, but I'm going to read on anyway.
All right.
So she says public money should be spent, and I hate the term public money. It's taxpayer money. It's not public. There's nothing public about it. You steal it from us every 2 weeks or month or however often we get paid. It's not public money. But anyway, public money should be spent on non-market housing like cooperatives, nonprofits, and public housing that is permanently affordable and accessible. Well, I'll stop myself right there because, well, there happens to be public housing not far from my house. And, well, the word tar paper shack comes to mind because they're just not maintained.
Yeah, no, there's a few homeless shelters that I've seen. Like, I don't know if I'd call them homeless shelters. They're for homeless, but they're like old hotels or motels that the government bought and converted into apartments, basically, right? And the crime around those areas is massive. Like, it's really bad. A lot of businesses are actually moving, or they're closing their doors completely, or they've just given up trying to stop people from breaking in. And they take the safe home with them. Like, it's they don't even leave anything on site anymore because the crime is so bad, right? And they look like garbage. Like, they're being destroyed. Why would we want to just waste money like that?
Yeah, well, and I mean, ask yourself this question: if you are in a nonprofit, etc., where's the money for maintenance? I mean, so again, cooperative housing, some of those actually work. So I'm not going to diss too much on the co-op housing. There are some that actually work quite well. There's not a lot of them around, and there's waiting lists to get into a lot of them, but some of those work if they're managed properly. But when you've got this non-market housing, public housing always looks like crap, at least in my experience. And my apologies to anybody who is in public housing, but ask yourself how easy it is to get a plumber out there. Cause you've got to call your housing advocate, who then calls the city or the governing body at any rate, who then gets a hold of a plumber and then sends them out. So when I call my plumber, they're out usually that day or the next day. And public housing, well, it's not that quick.
Yeah, I have a problem with people who think that people are owed something. And that's what this housing advocate is saying, right? Like, that housing is a human right. You know, as soon as a government declares it a human right, they've just opened themselves up to lawsuits. Because homeless people will now be able to sue them for not providing them with housing. And people, and honestly, if housing is a human right, then I'm going to sue the government for the cost of my house. And they should reimburse me for how much I paid for my house, because it's a human right.
Wow, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of that.
Like, it's a human right for me to have this house. So why should I have to pay for it?
Yeah. Boom. I like that. Yeah. And she, well, and of course, she says the key ingredient, I'm reading right from her release, is to get there is a human rights approach that puts people first over profit. We must prioritize housing that is safe, healthy, and affordable for everyone. Listen closely, from students to newcomers to people with low incomes. We must prioritize housing for people with disabilities, seniors, and families. And it must remain affordable in perpetuity so we don't find ourselves here again in 20 years.
I got news for you. We will still be here in 20 years because of programs like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and she admits it's a complex problem that requires many solutions. Absolutely. But government is not one of those solutions.
No,
they just
government
aren't.
Yeah, government is never a solution to any problem, because government messes up every single thing they touch. And that is fact. I dare anybody to tell me one thing the government does well.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, because, I mean, they don't do policing well. They don't do the courts well. They don't do healthcare well. They don't do they don't deal with homelessness well. They don't deal with anything well. There's nothing they do well. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, you are absolutely correct. And well, since you went down that road, Justin Trudeau has been running around the country making all these housing announcements, and I've got to address them because it's frankly pissing me off, pardon my French, that
I speak French, and that wasn't French.
That's true, yes. I'm not sure how I would say that in French, but
but yeah, anyway, I don't either.
He's very much annoying me, and he's running around the country and talking about these new, and we discussed the Renter's Bill of Rights. Every housing announcement he has made, he has said federal funding must include that Renter's Bill of Rights on a provincial level, and they must also play ball with every other rule he sets in place. What he's not saying is that the homes must be built to what was it, 50% more energy efficiency than the 2019 code? Was that what it was?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And which we've had builders on different programs who have said, that's actually impossible. One builder even said, you know what? I don't think we could build a home that was 50% more energy efficient than 1919 standards, let alone 2019. So another standard that can't be met. And just yesterday, I saw the video of Justin Trudeau walking through a modular home being built and said, this is now the answer, prefab and modular homes. Well, we talked about this last summer when Sean Fraser had first brought the idea up. And I will say it again. I grew up in a quote unquote modular home. They were called trailers back in those days. And well, they're very much cheap, slapped together, claptrap shacks. I know it well.
Are you referring to a mobile home?
Exactly,
Okay,
yes.
so mobile home and a modular home are not the same thing.
Not exactly. I mean, they're built in factory, right? When it's
Yeah, they are pre-manufactured, but they come in two halves, and when they put them on a foundation and they put them together, right? So they're not quite the same as a mobile home, but yeah.
Yeah. And so watching him walking through this manufacturer or modular home, sorry. And yeah, you can see the skeleton of the wall behind him. And I thought, well, at least it looks like they've got 2x4 walls, but they're still using that press board for
Yeah.
the interior walls. And so how are you meeting any kind of, energy efficiency standard if they're still using that chipboard for the walls? Then that's just one example that I saw
Yeah.
just by watching the video.
No, it's true. I mean, the only way you're going to hit like 50% more efficiency than 2019, I mean, honestly, it's not even possible. But you're going to have to make R50 walls. And R50 walls are 12 inches thick. Like you're just not going to do it. You doing building modular homes. It's not even possible. It's impossible. It's actually impossible.
Yeah, and the whole idea of the prefabricated idea, I mean, it's not the way to go. I mean, the way to go is actually to build homes on site with a builder that knows what the hell they're doing. And that's not to say that the prefab guys don't know what they're doing, but they're in a different market. They're building, homes that are quick and efficient and out the door.
Yeah,
And
they're low
fine.
cost.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a
Yeah.
market for that. No problem. But this was a lovely announcement. There was a video of Chrystia Freeland last weekend that I saw, and she was so excited about this new apartment building in downtown Victoria. And look at the view you've got here. These are affordable middle class home apartments, was what she said. Affordable middle class apartments. Okay, so a 330 square foot studio apartment in this particular building in Victoria. 330 square feet. So basically the size of my living room and kitchen combined. $1,750 a month, affordable middle class living. A one bedroom in that same building, $2,100 a month, affordable middle class living in Victoria.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that just shows how out of touch she is. I mean, she's completely out of touch making her $300,000 a year, right? So, but you glossed over something, and I want to bring it back up. This renter's bill of rights that is attached to all the funding, it has to be, so if a province wants funding for affordable housing, and for they have to impose a renter's bill of rights in their province. They have to, or else they won't get the funding. Like this is the government overstepping. It is the government crossing jurisdictional lines. And there are provinces now that are fighting back, and they're saying, hey, you're dipping your toes in provincial jurisdiction now. And you can't do this. Ontario is speaking up about it. Saskatchewan's speaking up about it. Alberta's speaking up about it. I don't know who else is, but I think New Brunswick might be. And then there's provinces like mine, like BC, where they're going, oh, yeah, we'll do whatever you want. Just tell us what to do. We'll do it. And we're all too willing to just do whatever you want, JT, right? Like, that's all, that's BC. And so this, yeah, this Renter's Bill of Rights, it's attached to the funding. You have to impose this if you want the funding.
Yep. And well, here's where it gets controversial. I think that Justin Trudeau was imposing these conditions knowing that people like Danielle Smith and Scott Moe and Doug Ford will flip him the bird. Even Wab Kanu is cold on the idea, an NDP Premier of Manitoba, because, yes, we are going there again. Justin Trudeau deliberately took the bait because he is now going to turn it back on the provinces and pick a fight and say, I am here trying to solve your housing crises, and the provinces are turning their backs on Canadians. Only I will be the champion of Canadians and save you in this housing crisis.
And why would he be doing that, Tony?
Well, I think he'd be doing that because he's about to call an election.
I would agree with you. And so this is the point in the show where Tony and I quadruple down on our call for an election this spring. And because there is so much evidence that there's an election coming.
Do you want to share some more evidence of that?
Sure.
Okay, so just a couple of days ago, NDP MPs Charlie Angus, Rachel Blaney, and Carol Hughes all announced they will not be running for re-election again. Oh, was there an election coming? Why would they announce that now?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, why? And they all announced on the same day. And I do have to be honest, the fact that Charlie Angus has decided to retire, it's a little disappointing in my mind because he is one of the only sane members of the NDP, although his latest the latest things he's been trying to push in the House of Commons have made me kind of go, what happened to the old Charlie Angus? But Charlie Angus has always been kind of a somewhat level-headed person in the NDP caucus, which is pretty rare for NDP, but they all announced on the same day that they weren't going to be running again. Why would they do that? And then in your riding, I believe it's your riding, Brad Redekop is out canvassing.
Yes, and to be fair, it was actually all Conservative Party MPs having their, quote, national day of canvassing. And I just said, Brad Redekop hasn't actually knocked on a door since 2021. Well, isn't that curious?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few curious things going on that make us, believe that there's an election coming. I mean, didn't we just see something on X about a CTV news report saying that JT's approval ratings are going up, that the gap between Justin Trudeau and Pierre Poilievre is closing, and that there's an election on the horizon?
As a matter of fact, that is exactly what that report said. I saw it on X. It was Rex Glazer, who I don't know myself, but he's followed by some people that I do respect, like Brian Lilly and Dan McTagg being two of them. And he had said, yeah, his wife had CTV on, and that was exactly what it said. Justin Trudeau is about to surpass Pierre Poilievre and get ready for an election. What?
Yeah, so we're not the only ones who are thinking there's an election coming.
But wait, there's more. You had talked, Lewis, you had sent this article from the Financial Post. I'll just read from the article. The Bank of Canada needs to cut interest rates aggressively once inflation is tamed and the economy is sputtering. Well, inflation is down below 3% now, so within that quote-unquote acceptable range of between 2 and 3%, Dan McTagg just reported out the federal unemployment rate, or the national unemployment rate, sorry, 6.1%. Well, that would explain why there's lineups literally around the block at job fairs in Toronto and Halifax. And that would also explain why Trudeau's running around talking about how the government is here for you.
Yeah.
And our friend Nick Nanos, well, he just happens to say that Well, the CPC numbers are going down. The Liberal numbers are going up. Trudeau has momentum. Okay, it was Nick Nanos, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, he's not my friend. I don't know whose friend he is, but he's not mine. Like, speak for yourself there, buddy.
Yeah.
But it is Nick Nanos. I mean, Nick Nanos might as well be a card-carrying Liberal. So, I mean, his polling always favors the Liberals. Even, like, his polling now shows the gap between the Liberals and the Conservatives is smaller than every other polling company. So, he's a guy that I've never really taken seriously. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, there's so many things that are pointing to an election, and not to mention there's a report on election interference that's supposed to be coming out soon. And that's supposed to be coming out at the end of May. Well, wouldn't you want to get out ahead of that?
You certainly would if you're Justin Trudeau.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many things. And yet every time we have said there's going to be an election when Justin Trudeau's been in power, we've been wrong. But we're right this time.
We are right this time. Even the punditry class is saying, well, it's so unusual for the government to be releasing details of their budget, you know, dripping them out day in and day out before budget day, because usually it's all just on budget day. Well, Trudeau has been out selling his budget for 2 weeks, I would think, now.
Yeah, and there's still a week to go, right? So, I mean, like, they've basically released all of the important points of the budget. They've released them all, like, 2 to 3 weeks before the election, or before the budget even is presented in the House of Commons. So this is not normal. Like, you'll get bits and pieces to, like, whet the appetite, and then the day that the budget is presented in the House, you find out a bunch of other stuff. But they've pretty much laid it all out there already. Like, they're trying to sell it. Well, yeah. You don't need to sell it if you're the if there's no election, right? Like, that's an interesting thing to me that's happening right now. Not to mention the Justin Trudeau will not rule out a new taxes or tax hikes on the wealthy or corporate. Apparently, that, you know, he keeps saying no new taxes on the middle class and those working hard to join it. That's another thing that I'm seeing, right? Like, there's this the rich need to pay their fair share thing coming out right now, which the last time we heard that, there was an election. So there's just so many things right now that are pointing towards an election.
Yes, and this is something you had brought up 3 weeks ago, maybe, that on April 11th, the Bank of Canada will make its latest interest rate adjustment, or lack thereof, and then the budget is released April 16th. So you had sort of proposed that, well, there might just be a rate cut. And, well, I just quoted the Financial Post saying they need to cut rates to get the economy going. So, well,
and not to mention that I believe it was the same article that said that the Canadian interest rates are going to be cut more than the US interest rates. Like, they're going to be more aggressive here. Well, why would you be more aggressive here? Like, why would you cut them more than the US, right? Like, so, I mean, if there's an election coming, that would help, right?
Sure would.
Look what we've done. We've brought the interest rates down. We've brought the inflation rate down. We've increased jobs, you know, all this stuff. I mean, forget they caused all this. But that's what they would go into an election doing. Trying to sell it that way.
You bet. And then when that budget does finally get released, they can say, well, this is our campaign document. We need to bring this to Canadians for their approval.
Yeah, exactly. Now, so, if there is an election being held in May, my daughter is going to be really upset because she's in Europe right now for 2 months backpacking, and it's the first time she's old enough to vote, and she would be so upset if the election is before she gets back.
I think there's still ways she could do it, though.
I think she has to go to a Canadian consulate or something.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but that would require her to go and search one out, which, you know. But they might do that. If there is an election, we'll make sure that she finds a way to vote.
Yeah, at least that she knows how. I mean, I wouldn't blame her if she didn't, because I went backpacking in Europe as a youngster as well, but only for a couple of weeks, and she's going for 2 months. That's fantastic.
Yeah, when I graduated high school, I went for 3 months, and I backpacked. I went by myself, and it was the time of my life. I recommend every kid do it. You learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about the world. You come back with a better perspective on life and the way different parts of the world work. It's the best thing I ever did.
Yep. Oh, agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she's over there right now. She's going for 2 months, and they're in Paris at the moment, and they're having a blast. So,
oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, and you know what? There's a I think JT will be shooting himself in the foot to call an election now, but I still think he's going to do it. And we're going to talk about some of the polling right away here. Just in my own household, I have a stepdaughter who was diehard for the NDP and was deathly silent when we had a conversation with her brother, who had said, "Hey, you know what? I work in concrete. I help build homes. I can't afford to buy one. I'm voting for PP." And yeah, his sister didn't say a word because she's paying, you know, a lot of money to rent her apartment right now. So it's affecting the young folks the most. And it's the millennials and Gen Z that are going to be the strongest rejecting Trudeau. And you're seeing that right now. I mean, that's what the polling is saying, that you've lost those people, JT. You're not going to get them back by saying, "Oh yeah, we're going to build more modular homes." People want a backyard, dumbass.
Yep, exactly. And speaking of polling, we have a whole bunch of polls here that we want to discuss, because there's a lot of polling that's been done in the past week by several different companies, and we've got some really interesting ones to talk about. So, Tony, where do you want to start?
Oh my gosh. There are so many polls right now. Let us go to the preferred prime minister polling.
Sure.
So this comes from Polling Canada, and you dug a bunch of this up last night. You were up late. Well, I guess you're an hour behind me, so maybe you weren't up that late. But Polling Canada, preferred prime minister polling. Poilievre, 33%. That's actually pretty good. Trudeau, 22%. What the hell? Singh, 15%. Blanchette for prime minister, 6%.
Yeah, that one I didn't understand.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, he can't. It's impossible, because he's only running candidates in one province. And the other thing is, they're a separatist party.
Yeah. Then, and who the hell are these 5% that want Elizabeth May? 2%.
Yeah. Must be the drunks at the local bar.
Yeah, exactly. And 2% Maxime Bernier. So at least I'm a 2%er, not a 1%er. And unsure, 17%. So there's more people who are unsure who would be a good prime minister than believe Jagmeet Singh would be a good prime minister.
That's true. And but you know what? I don't blame people for being unsure. Because, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you know, Poilievre has his faults too. And so, I mean, I don't blame people for not being sure about him. Now, let's talk about this poll on... Oh, this is a fun one. Which party leader would you least want to sit next to on a long plane trip? Trudeau is sitting at 24%. 24% of people would not want to sit next to him. Poilievre, 24% as well. Bernier 11%, Singh 10%, May 6%, all of them 7%, and none of them 18%. So now I'm surprised that the Trudeau number is that low. I would have expected it to be even higher. Like close to 50% or more. Poilievre, I mean, I get it. I mean, like you said, you've met him. I've seen him live. I've seen him interact with people live. I haven't actually met him myself. But I mean, he is somewhat arrogant, right? And I feel like, you know, that you can't really have an honest conversation with someone who is arrogant like that, right? Bernier, 11%. Well, I can understand that. I mean, he's hard to understand, and he dominates conversations, right? Singh, 10%. Okay. That should have been like 90.
Yeah. Yeah. Because remember, this is the polling saying who was the one you'd least want to sit with.
Yeah. Like he's Jagmeet Singh is like a really dumb person. So I could never imagine wanting to sit next to Singh on a plane. And May 6%. Like, come on. That should have been 100, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
Like that's wow. Like she just would be the worst person to sit next to on a plane. Maybe, yeah. Maybe not quite as bad as Trudeau, but pretty bad.
Yeah. So, just for fun, here's my take on these ones. So I would never want to sit on a long plane trip with Trudeau because I would not be able to resist the urge to pummel him, plain and simple. I could not sit on a plane ride with Pierre Poilievre because, yeah, I mean, I've got to meet him twice and he knows he's the smartest guy in the room and I just can't stand people like that.
Yeah.
I like his policies, I'm not going to lie. But Max Bernier, you bet I could sit with Max. I mean, I would get annoyed after a while because, as you say, he dominates the conversation. He doesn't know when to shut up. You always have to interrupt if you want to get a point in. But at least Max is actually a pretty down-home kind of guy.
And he's very smart.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
He is very smart, but he's not like, he's not one of these guys that knows he's the smartest guy in the room. He's very open to, you know, having a conversation with you and listening to your opinion. That's one thing I've really enjoyed about talking to him on our show, is that he's a thoughtful person.
True. Yeah. And I mean, Jagmeet Singh, I don't think I would just get off the plane. I don't even think I would endure a ride with Jagmeet Singh.
Yeah. Give me a parachute.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, Elizabeth May, okay. Sorry. I don't suffer drunks very well. So, Liz, you can go stay up in the front. I'll move seats. Not doing it.
Yeah. So here's another poll. This one's interesting. Do you agree with climate change is a fact and is mostly caused by natural changes in cycles? Out of all Canadians, 27% agree with that. That's it. Just 23%. That means 73% of Canadians disagree with that. With that statement. Now, of the parties, 51% of PPC members agree with that. I'm surprised it's that low, to be honest.
Yeah.
Conservative Party, 49%. Again, I'm a little surprised by that it's that low. Bloc Québécois, 21% agree with that. Green Party, 18% of people agree with that. I'm surprised it's that high.
Yeah.
Liberal Party, 9% agree with that statement that global warming is mostly natural. And 8% of NDP. Now, here's this next poll. Do you agree with climate change is a fact and mostly caused by humans? Out of all Canadians, 62% agree with that statement. If you're a member of the NDP, Congratulations. 90% of you agree with that statement. 89% of liberals agree with that statement. 78% of Bloc Québécois members agree with that statement. Which means only 1% of Bloc Québécois members are unsure.
Yeah.
77% of Green Party members. Again, I'm surprised it's that low.
Right.
With the Green Party, I would have expected 100%.
Well, you'd think that, yeah.
Yeah. 33% of conservatives agree with climate change being caused by humans. Surprised it's that high. And 14% of PPC members. So again, I'm surprised it's that high. So these are crazy numbers. Like, you can see how ideologies really affect this, right? NDP, Liberals, Bloc Québécois, Green Party members, they all believe people are evil.
Yeah. So here's one poll I want to jump to. This was, again, grain of salt, it's nanos, but preferred prime minister polling. Well, Poiliev is still in the lead, but he's down 1 point at 33%. 22% for Trudeau as preferred prime minister. 15% for Jagmeet Singh. Again, 6% for Blanchet. What the actual? Elizabeth May, 5%. Bernier, 2%. How the hell does Trudeau have 22% of the preferred prime minister?
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, like, there's another one where it says Poiliev is 35%, Singh is 20%, Trudeau is 20%, May is 4%, and Bernier is 1%. None of them 15%. I don't know. Like, how are there that many people who still support him?
Yeah, that absolutely blows my mind.
Yeah. Ontario, support for requiring a referendum for any future provincial carbon pricing program. 53% of Ontarians agree that they need a referendum for a future carbon pricing program. Great. 53%. Awesome. That's fantastic. Only 23% oppose. That's it. So congratulations, Ontario. You guys are starting to turn the corner here. Ontario provincial polling. What's PCPO? That's
Progressive Conservative Party of Ontario.
Okay. All right. So conservatives are sitting at 37%. You're down 4% since the last election. Ontario Liberal Party, 27%. They're up 3%. Oh, good.
Well, that's because they got a new leader, right? There's always that honeymoon.
Yeah. Ontario NDP, 25%. You're up 1%. Green Party of Ontario, 6%. Steady. I mean, that's kind of a number that just kind of goes all the way across the country. 6%, 5 to 6% for the Green Party is pretty standard. Others, 4%. So, Ontario, you guys are still favoring the Conservative Party. However, I did see another poll where it says that nobody is happy with Doug Ford and how he's running the province, like nobody. So that just shows you how much people despise the Ontario Liberal Party and NDP, that they can't even raise their support enough when everybody hates Doug Ford.
Right.
Like that's a real revealing number as far as I'm concerned. There's a couple of by-election polling results for Ontario. Ontario Milton, so PC's sitting at 39%. The Liberals as well, 39%. NDP, 10%. Green Party, 5%. Others, 6%. Ontario Lambton, Kent, Middlesex by-election polling. PC's 39%. Liberals, 26%. NDP, 14%. Green, 12%. So, I mean, this is interesting results for those by-elections. Milton, I'm a little surprised at that the Conservatives and the Liberals are tied there.
Yeah.
There's here's another one about climate change. Climate change is a theory that has not yet been proven. All Canadians, 7% agree with that statement. That is not that climate change is a theory and has not yet been proven. PPC 35%, Conservatives 13%, Green Party 4%, NDP 2%, and Liberals 2%. I'm a little I'm very disappointed in these numbers, to be honest. There's oh here we go. British Columbia. I know everybody loves to hear about the insanity in BC. So, British
Bring it.
Columbia, are things in the province going in the right or wrong direction? Wrong direction, 48%. Right direction, 42%.
Yep. And
Yet,
actually,
and yet, here's the polling for the parties in the province. NDP would have 80 seats if an election were called today out of 93. 80 seats out of 93. Conservatives, 10 seats. BC United Soccer Team, 2 seats. And the Green Party, 1 seat. Nobody likes the way the province is going, but we're going to give the NDP the government back in a landslide.
yeah, and here's what's bizarre with that. Also, a former NDP MLA, her name is Gwen O'Mahony, has decided that she's actually going to run for the Conservative Party of BC. And even polling candidates, I gotta say, I didn't have a former NDP MLA running for the BC Conservatives on my bingo card.
This just further proves your theory of the uniparty.
Really, it does, yeah. It's just kind of which way are the winds blowing? Oh yeah, I'm gonna go conservative.
But I'm a little surprised by the Conservatives accepting her nomination because I mean she is a former NDP MLA. Like this isn't like she was a BC United.
Right.
She's a BC NDP. Like their philosophies completely oppose each other. Like how do you jump from the NDP to the Conservatives? And the Conservatives just go, yeah, we'll take you. I
Yeah.
don't understand that. Now, here's some numbers that are actually somewhat troubling for me. Alberta. Are things in the province going in the right or wrong direction? Wrong direction, 59%. Right direction, 34%.
Ouch.
I'm speechless.
Yeah, I yeah.
Alberta is one of the only provinces in the country that is going in the right direction. Like
Yeah.
Alberta, Saskatchewan, New Brunswick. Otherwise, nobody like they're the only three provinces in the country that are even going somewhat in the right direction. Like, I don't understand Alberta right now. Like, what? I mean, you have a premier that everybody I know in BC, every one of the people I know wishes we had Danielle Smith as premier. Like, I don't know anybody who doesn't like Danielle Smith here. Like, what is wrong with you guys? Like, 59% think you're going in the wrong direction. And then you look at the polling, and the UCP, Danielle Smith's party, is sitting at 46%. Now, most people would think that that's a hell of a number in Canada, but not when the NDP's sitting at 44%.
Yeah, that's insane.
Like if Naheed Nenshi wins the nomination for the NDP leadership, Alberta, you can kiss your province goodbye because he's going to become the premier. He will win. And then you've got problems.
Yeah, big time. But we're going to leave you with a little bit of hope, Canada, because Updated numbers, and this was as of March 31st, if there were an election held, well, I guess on March 31st, the Conservative Party is under Pierre Poilievre is projected to win 210 seats to 63 for the Liberals, 38 for the Bloc, 25 NDP, and two Green parties. So not much would change at the bottom rungs, but it would be a huge shift between the Conservatives and Liberals. So there is hope.
I'm still shocked that the Liberals would have 63 seats.
Yeah, I don't get that either. I mean, I know there's always those certain safe ridings where you could run a fence post under the Liberal banner or the Conservative banner, for that matter, and win that seat. I mean, there's always going to be those, but that's usually like, you know, a dozen or so ridings. In the case of Liberals, you know, a dozen on the West Island where they will never, ever lose, and a few in downtown Toronto. And, you know, for Conservatives, seats on the prairies, in, as an example. But 63? How many morons are still out there?
By the sounds of it, quite a few.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, wow. I'm shocked. I'm blown away that 63 seats would still go to the Liberals. It's shocking. I mean, look at when the Reform Party made their big push in that bit. I think it was the 93 election.
Yes.
When they really made their big push, they almost became the official opposition, and they had 50 seats, like, or 54 seats, something like that. And it was like, everybody was like, wow, that's amazing. The Liberals have like 10 more than that if an election were held today. Like, that just blows my mind. It doesn't make any sense. Like, the Liberals are just, they have screwed this country over so bad, and they would still be the official opposition.
Yeah. We'll let that sink in, Canada. Wow. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I suppose, yes, you got them out and you got a Conservative majority, but still, if there's that many people who are still say, yeah, I think Justin Trudeau is doing a good job. He deserves another chance. Wait, what?
Yeah, it's shocking. It's absolutely shocking that the Liberals would still be the official opposition if an election were held today.
Yeah. Yep. I agree with that. So I think we'll wrap the show up on that, Canada, that at least there's some hope. There would still be a Conservative government, but just with too many Liberals in the House.
Yeah. Yeah. Too many Liberals and too many NDP. Oh, too many Bloc too.
Yeah.
And too many Greens. I mean, two is too many. But
that's true. Yep. All right, Canada. We want to thank you for joining us today. And until next week, it is Tony in Saskatchewan.
And Lewis out here in BC. Good night.
Good night, Canada.